transformational coaching. We throw that word around a lot here on the podcast. It's because it's the type of coaches, it's the type of leaders and people that we're striving to be. To be a transformational coach, though, it requires a clear vision and a clear purpose. If you want to make a positive difference in the lives of others, it requires a personal investment in our own transformation and our own growth so that we can be better leaders and better people. It also requires intentionality, like intentionality in the way that we lead, in the way that we build relationships, the way that we support our athletes, the way that we discipline and support standards. But at the end of the day, most of us are willing to do those things it requires. I think really, truly, that the listeners on this podcast, the coaches that we work with in the TOC community, we're willing to do those things because this is what we feel called to do. But transformational coaching also requires sacrifice. It requires sacrifice, and it comes at a high personal cost to ourselves and to our families. Few of us, are coaching in an environment or a community that truly appreciates their efforts. More often than not, we're in an environment, a community that is resistant and even sometimes hostile to this approach towards coaching. I've known coaches who've set out on this journey to be transformational in their leadership, and they've been told to just shut up and coach. Some have been told, and I quote, "Stop worrying about developing my son's character. That's my job." Nearly every coach on this journey at some stage has been told by a player, a parent, administrator, or even some of their staff that they need to start focusing, start talking more about, and start worrying more about winning than the culture and the character and all that stuff. So today's episode is the story of one coach's season, a season that turned badly, and it turned bad quickly. So badly that he was asked to step down in the middle of the season. It's a story that some people may resonate with. They may have experienced something like that themselves. And it's an experience and a story that others may eventually go through themselves as well. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast. So Nate, you sharing this very personal story, a very personal story for you. It's been a long time coming. I knew at some stage we would address it on the podcast. And it's been a long 9-month journey for you since you were asked to step down in the middle of last season. And after a lot of encouragement and persistence and nagging from me, it's finally happening. There's a lot to unpack and discuss around the story, but first, why don't you start by actually just telling the story and sharing their story with our listeners today?
Well, JP, I'm going to take the story back a little bit just to give our listeners some context as to kind of how we ended up at Linmar, and then we'll talk through a little bit of our experience in year three. But 3 years ago, I was the head basketball coach at Springville High School in Iowa. We had just won 2 state titles and been runner-up the year before that. And Linmar High School, which was one of the biggest schools in the state, located not that far from our house, recruited us and offered us eventually the position to be the head girls basketball coach there. And as my wife and I were going through that discernment process, we just felt like this was an amazing opportunity, not just to coach at a higher level in a bigger school and to build a bigger program, but to really, in a lot of ways, see if the way that we were coaching based on some of the transformational principles and trying to build character and culture would work at a higher level. And so we took the position, and in year one, we had a rough year. We had the worst year in school history. I think we went 3-19. At the beginning of that year, we lost 3 Division I athletes that ended up not playing for different reasons, and actually 15 kids overall that were in the program the year before. chose not to go out in my first year. So we were young and we took our lumps kind of throughout that first year. Now, when we went into year two, we had a much better season. We ended up finishing the year 11-11. So we were 500. We won a playoff game. I think we beat three ranked teams that year during the regular season. And at the end of that year, going into year three, we essentially were going to bring everybody back except for one senior, kind of our captain of the captains, and who was our best player that year was graduating. But otherwise, everyone was coming back from a 500 team, and we were actually picking up a kid that probably would have started for us in year two, but she blew her ACL out before the start of the year. And so there was a lot of excitement. There was a lot of expectation that we'd take another big step forward in terms of just our competitiveness as a program. So I felt like over that summer going into year three, we had a really good summer. We started the year with maybe the best week of practice that I've ever experienced in my career, just in terms of our energy and our effort and our enthusiasm was unbelievable. And in fact, that Saturday, I remember we played four scrimmages in kind of a jamboree situation, and we went 4-0 on that day. And that became sort of the peak of our season 1 week in. Now, one of the things that we were trying to implement into the culture in year three in our program was the idea that things had to be earned. Playing time had to be earned. A starting position had to be earned. A varsity jersey had to be earned. We weren't going to just give those things out because players were a certain age or they had been in the program for a certain number of years. And so that meant that some of the younger players that had been gaining experience and some new players coming into the program were going to be given the opportunity to challenge some of our veterans. And ultimately, that would lead to some conflict down the road that we'll get into here in just a few moments. But as we started the year, JP, we really, the first third of the year, just shot the ball terrible. Like, there's no other way to really describe it. We shot about 32% from the field in our first seven games. And I don't care what league you're playing in, when you're only making 3 out of 10 shots, it's hard to win, let alone at the 5A level in the state of Iowa. And so over the first third of the year, I think we were 2-5 going into the break. If we would have shot the ball better or as well as we did the year before, we probably would have been 5-2. And so that sort of created a situation where because we weren't getting the outcomes that were expected, now all of a sudden it became a little bit of open season on the person that was responsible for that, which was me. And interestingly enough, over the next probably 3 weeks or so of the year, I really felt like I experienced about a career's worth of conflict in about a 3 week time period. And I'm going to just hit the highlights of kind of what that stretch was like. Right after Thanksgiving, we had a situation on our team where a player had just made some derogatory remarks about one of her teammates on a social media situation. That got screenshotted and brought back to our attention, both for the coaching staff and the administration. And so I remember that was the weekend after Thanksgiving, and we had to deal with that on Monday. Then on Tuesday, we beat a team in town, kind of, which was a big upset. They had a Division I player, and we kind of shut her down with a unique defensive scheme or whatever. And it was probably maybe the second biggest win that I had since I'd been at Linmar. And that night, before I can even get down to my office or get ready to leave my office, I've got an email from a parent who's upset because their daughter didn't play or didn't play very much on that evening. So the next day, on Wednesday, one of my assistant coaches comes up to me after practice and he says, "Hey, Nate, I just want to make you aware of something." I hate conversations that start like that. But he says, "I got an email from a friend of mine who was at the game the night before at the big upset. And he's not affiliated with anybody in our program. He was just there to help support one of our coaches. And he said, I've never been or never experienced such a negative atmosphere at a high school event before in my life." And the coach said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" And he's like, "Well, I was up sitting in the stands and there's just constant complaining and constant criticism of the officials, of the players, of the coaches, of the subs that are coming in, the subs that are going out." He said it was so bad. Eventually, I had to move, and then I just decided to leave. And now that's not much we can do about that, but it just gives you an idea of sort of the atmosphere, you know, that was kind of in our stands at the time. The next day, this would have been a Thursday, our coaching staff and the ADs get an anonymous letter from some of the parents giving their suggestions about what we should do on offense and what we should do on defense and how we should rotate players and what we should do with seniors, that they should all dress varsity. And they were kind enough to give us a blueprint and said that, you know, if you put this offense in, In two practices, you'll be averaging over 50 points a game guaranteed. After that, the next day, we get an email from another parent that wants to request a meeting. And so that gets scheduled for the following Monday. And, you know, that episode was like the parent meeting from hell. The parents come in with the daughter and they've got the folder and they've got the four page bulleted list of all the things that we've done wrong to that player in the last 3 years since we've been there. And their whole argument was to essentially convince the AD that we've ruined this kid's life because we have a personal vendetta against her. And so we sat there for 90 minutes and we just took it one line at a time, bullet by bullet, just stand there and take the criticism one after another. So that meeting kind of ended a 7 to 10 day stretch that was just bonkers. I mean, in terms of the amount of stress and the frustration and the anxiety. And, you know, carried that feeling, not really knowing, you know, what is everyone saying in the stands? What are the parents thinking? What are the players thinking? What's the AD thinking? Over the next week or two, as we got close to Christmas break. And once we got into break, I got an email from our AD that said she wanted to have a mandatory meeting before we started practice again after Christmas. Didn't really get any much more information about it other than that. And so that obviously caused me to worry a little bit as well. But nevertheless, assistant coach and I sat down and we kind of went through some of the complaints that players had been having over the last month of the season that they were bringing to the AD or that they were sharing with her sort of in conversations in the cafeteria or, you know, passing in the hallway or what have you. And the purpose of the meeting was really just to inform us of some of the things that the players and captains weren't sharing with us in terms of, you know, what players were frustrated about as far as, well, pretty much everything that we were doing. There were complaints about how we were trying to build a culture, how we were practicing, what we're doing on offense, what we're doing on defense, who we're playing, how we're rotating. I mean, you go down the line and there was just general discontent all the way around. And so after break, I met with a couple of the captains and I brought some of those things to their attention. And I said, listen, here's some of the information that's been shared with me. Is this what's really going on? You know, are we really frustrated with how we're practicing? That's kind of where we started the conversation. And if so, can you help me try to do it better? Like, what's a way that's going to reach this team? And the captains were, you know, somewhat helpful in that situation, but not really forthcoming and not overly interested in trying to be problem solvers, which also kind of inhibited our ability to make changes to try to reach the team. So we tried a couple things differently over the rest of break. We come out of break and jumped right into kind of the murderer's row of our schedule. So we had number 5 ranked team first game out and played really well, actually. It was like a 5-point game midway through the third before they got a little bit of separation. And coach and I, my assistant coach and I, felt pretty good after that game. Like, we were really competitive. And then again, we get another email and this from administration, you know, criticizing our rotations and our use of timeouts and, you know, just saying this thing's going to blow up if we don't start finding a way to play upperclassmen, and just another cavalcade kind of complaints for us to sort of have to think about and deal with. So the following week, we play another team in our conference from across town. We win a game by 30. Everybody plays, 10 players score. Everybody felt great, you know, on the bench. Our starters are going bonkers for our rotation and reserves that are in the game. And it felt like, man, this is exactly what we needed. You know, everybody got their opportunity. We played really well. And the next day, there's a couple phone calls to the AD from parents that are upset because the seniors aren't getting enough playing time. It's their last time around. You know, this is, they put their heart and soul in it for their whole lives, and therefore they should be, for lack of a better word, entitled to play because of their seniority. And so, you know, we go into the next week. We go on the road to play at the number 1 team in the state, and nobody has been within 30 points of this team going into the second half or going into a fourth quarter. We're up 1 going into the fourth quarter, still have the lead 5 minutes to go before we turn it over twice. They make a couple threes, and we can never quite get back into it, you know, but we were right there almost all the way up until the end. And you'd think, wow, if there was ever any, you know, evidence that we were becoming more competitive and starting to figure this out a little bit, that would have been it. And yet, when we walk into the locker room after the game, you can just feel the disappointment. Not necessarily that we lost. The players that played, 5, 6, 7 players that played a lot of the minutes in the game, like, wow, we almost had them. Like, it felt like a jolt of confidence. But for many of the others in the locker room, there's just a sadness and a disappointment that they didn't get an opportunity to play. And that was as well as we played all year. That's kind of frustrating to figure out as a coach when you walk out of there of exactly what to do with that. And so we started the next week with a snow makeup game on a Monday against a team that was also ranked in the top 10 in the state. And that was one of those games, like, we were never out of it, but we were never really in it. We thought maybe we were playing better. This might be our chance to get him. And we just couldn't, again, make enough shots to get close enough to scare him. And then the next night we played what was probably by record the worst team in our league and didn't play great in the first half of that game. We were up one at half. Eventually, we stretched it out and won relatively comfortably at the end. Now, at this point in the year, my assistant and I have been talking about, you know, how do we get through the rest of this season, hoping that we could do sort of a cultural reset going into year four with our juniors that were becoming seniors. And the approach that we had kind of taken in January was, if all the kids care about or the parents care about is winning and losing, and they don't care about mental health days and, you know, culture and some of the things that we were been trying to do over the years, then maybe we'll just invest everything we can in the basketball, try to give them the best opportunity to win games, and then just, as I said, hope we can do a reset at the end of the year. So as an example, in January, I didn't lead any of our mental health sessions. We brought somebody else in, or we did an activity with our special needs kids. We did teacher appreciation cards, but I took myself off the stage, you know, if players weren't going to be responsive to me in those situations. And so on this particular week, we had won that game on Tuesday. I get an email on Wednesday that says the AD wanted to meet with me on Thursday for our weekly meeting, which we've never had a weekly meeting before. So that was a bit of a red flag. But nevertheless, come in the next day and she closed the door behind me. And she said, Nate, I know we were going to try to make it to the end of the year and then maybe figure out a way forward. But she said the last 24 hours have just been unlike anything I've ever experienced. There were a number of players threatening to transfer, parents that were calling saying they weren't going to walk on senior night if I was going to be out there, other families that were emailing saying they didn't want to come to the banquet if I was going to be there. And so she said, I just don't think we're going to make it, and I need to ask you to resign for personal reasons. And she slid the letter across the desk and asked for my autograph. And that ended my tenure at Linmar High School.
Nate, I've kind of lived through a bit of that story with you, and I've also heard you recount that story to, you know, multiple groups of people within the Thrive On Challenge community. And, you know, just even hearing it again, you know, recount it, one thing that really stands out for me that I think coaches need and administrators and people should really pay attention to, which I think there is a difference between allowing people to be heard and gathering feedback and feeding a narrative. And in your situation, what might have been with an intention of like, hey, we want to hear what people are feeling, what they're thinking, became a feeding of a narrative of everything's falling apart. Coach maybe doesn't know what he's doing. This transformational culture stuff, this transformational coaching stuff doesn't work. We need this old school approach. And that spiraled out of control in your situation. And the story, the narrative, the story people are telling themselves within any team culture can change very, very quickly. Very quickly. And it's so often not about what the coach does, but it could be about what people are doing in the stands. It could be about what's happening, what's being said in the locker room. So I think that's just one thing I think it's really important to point out right off the bat, you know, is just that became a feeding of the narrative. Now, another thing I'd like for you to unpack, though, is something that I think is really important for you to share, because I think a lot of coaches go through similar experiences. And I don't want you to share this because we're trying to make you out to be some sort of martyr here, but just I was hoping you could share just personally, what was it like to go through that struggle day in and day out when, you know, you have invested so much into this team and into doing things the right way. You take great pride in your coaching. You're a co-host on the podcast about culture. Like, what was it like to go through that struggle?
Well, JP, I think on a number of different levels, you know, it there's a lot of emotions, obviously, when you're going through something like that, especially when it's compressed in such a short amount of time. You know, on the one hand, if you would have asked me about our process going into year three, I mean, I felt like we were doing some things that you know, we weren't doing at Springville, that our culture was in an amazing place. Things that we were doing with Parent Experience Night, with our Captain's Council, with our Big Sister program, you know, the way that we were practicing. I mean, you can go down the line, and I felt really good about some of the innovations and strategies that we were using. So particularly after seeing those things work at my previous school, it was really disheartening. I think I lost a lot of confidence as a coach in what I was doing, and even in, you know, the way I was thinking about everything, you know, when everything's being questioned. And you're a lot different person when you're not walking into the gym confident in what you're doing. I think from, you know, a mental health perspective, I've never experienced anxiety like I did during that month or 6 week period. I mean, I remember over Christmas break, you know, worrying about this meeting, like I lost 5 pounds, my resting heart rate went up 20%. I was totally checked out, you know, for that entire week from my family. And you know, that was all my fault. But I mean, just the physiological experience of what anxiety and all that cortisol running through your system feels like I'd never been in that place before either. So, you know, that was a challenge. The thing that was maybe the most difficult, especially after break, you know, after having some of those conversations with our AD, was that we just really didn't know who to trust. You know, we didn't know who was on board and who did believe in what we were trying to do and who was just putting on a good face and then ripping us to shreds behind our back. You know, and if you think about that, if your team, you know, your individual players go to the administration or have conversations there and they share all these complaints or frustrations, reasons that they don't love the game anymore or whatever, and that's shared with you, but you don't know where it came from. You can't have any follow-up conversations. You can't try to communicate with anybody individually. And you've got this list of things that people aren't happy with. And you walk into the gym and you don't know who said what. You just know that a lot of people are unhappy, you know? And I remember, I mean, little things. Like I normally would work through the stretching line and just try to connect with kids, talk about TV shows, talk about their day at school, talk about, you know, their hobby, whatever we know about them that doesn't have anything to do with basketball. And yet when you hear feedback that the players don't want to talk to you and they don't want to do one-on-ones with you and they don't, you know, don't talk to players without having another assistant coach next to you so nothing can be construed, you know, to be used against you, all of a sudden, like, I'm having anxiety of just having a simple conversation about what was for lunch today, you know. And you think about that after games, you know, the tradition there, a lot of the parents would wait kind of in the entryway by the doors, by the exit of the gym. And when we got to January, I mean, I would take my five-year-old and I would say, all right, Adelaide, we got to go over to the closet. She says, why? And I said, we just got to go check something in the closet. But that would make us take a different hallway to get back to my office. So we wouldn't have to do the walk of shame, you know, with everybody shooting daggers at you or not looking at you at all or pretending you don't exist or what have you. And so, you know, the day-to-day experience at that point was really challenging and on a lot of different levels.
You know, another thing I think is so important to mention is that the feedback that was going to your athletic director, you know, the criticisms that were, you know, you weren't, not only were you not able to answer those, but as you would learn out and find, discover later, that was not the general consensus. And not every player was against you or, you know, leading this charge here. So not only did it feed the narrative and the story that they were telling themselves, but it was feeding a story that you were telling yourself, which is nobody trusts me, nobody likes me, nobody appreciates this culture stuff, which wasn't true. It also kind of just points out this other fact that a few people can really have a large amount of influence into the story and the narrative. And obviously that kind of in some ways spun out of control because of a few individuals, you know, whether it be parents or, you know, the administration's lack of support and a few players as well. So another question I have for you is, you know, you're going through all these struggles, all these challenges. And I think one of the most important things that people can do in these moments is make sure that they have a support group or a circle of people that they can trust in these moments. Who was that for you as you were kind of going through the season, and how would you reach out to those people for help and support, and just what did that mean to you during that time?
In that regard, JP, I really felt fortunate. You know, I use the analogy, I felt like I was standing on a table with 12 legs because there was 10 to 12 people that knew what was going on all the way through that process. And they were from very different places in my life. I mean, a couple of my best friends, a couple of coaches on our staff, a couple of former assistant coaches that I coached with before. You know, you were with me every step of the way, my dad, my pastor, you know, and so I was getting support and perspective from a lot of different angles. But probably what meant the most to me with having that team around me was it was people that really knew me. You know, when you're in that place and you're starting to question yourself and you're questioning your philosophy and you're questioning your purpose, the people that have been around me for 20, 30, 40 years, you know, coaching and just growing up as a person, you know, were able to kind of speak life back into me, you know, and to remind me of what I felt like my purpose and mission was in coaching and the reason that, you know, we were good at what we were doing and that sort of thing. So, I know not every coach has that, but I felt like I had that in spades, and I'm not sure how I would have gotten through, you know, even what we did, without those people around me.
And I think it's great that you had people outside of like your staff in that sense too, because I think so often, like sometimes coaches may be running into problems with their staff, you know, or have a lack of trust there. Not that you had that issue, but I think that's just one of the things I would just was kind of reinforced by your story was like, this is why, you know, we're so passionate about the mentorship program because, you know, people can not just reach, you know, coaches don't just reach out for practical solutions or the next team activity. They reach out when they're just struggling with that self-belief, or they're bombarded with parent emails, you know, because I mean, here's the thing, this whole transformational coaching thing, it's not a smooth process. Not everybody's like, hooray, and sign up for it. Like there's a lot of resistance that we face, and so we have to build around ourselves, you know, a system of support, people that understand what we're about, who we are, and what we're trying to do, so that I think they kind of pour into us. So another question I wanted to ask Nate was just, you know, what happened next? I think like that part of the story is a really important piece. Like you're asked to step down for personal reasons and spend more time with your family. So then what's the next step for you after that?
Well, in the immediate aftermath of that meeting, you know, you just asked to leave. And so, you know, call my wife, I call my dad, I drive to my assistant coach's house, tell him what went on. And then from there, I have to figure out, you know, this is going to be in the papers. Obviously, it doesn't happen very often that a coach steps down, especially when the coach is the president of the coaches association in the state, you know, mid-year. And so I'm have to figure out how do you want to tell that story to the media. And that night I had a conversation with Will Ray, who's been a mentor of mine for a number of years and has been on the podcast before. And Will had walked with me kind of through this whole process. And he told me this story. He said, when I got let go at Loyola Chicago, somebody put me in touch with Hubie Brown. Hubie Brown's probably been fired by more NBA teams than anybody in history. He said, Hubie told me two things about losing your job. He said, one, when it happens, it's either going to be a relief or it's going to be a total shock. And I felt like, you know, immediately after that meeting, an immense sense of relief that all of the anxiety and all of the frustration and all of the uncertainty and all the mistrust and all of those things that had weighed me down for the last couple of months were just sort of lifted off instantly. Now, it doesn't mean that they weren't replaced with other, you know, anxieties about the future and am I going to be out of coaching? What's going to happen next? But for me, it really felt like a relief. And Will said the other thing that Hubie told him was that you're going to be tempted to be angry and to be bitter. And in some ways, that emotion is going to be justified, but you have to be very careful because if you don't temper that, you'll end up getting angry with the profession of coaching. And if that happens, you probably won't get back in it. And Hubie said that there's too many great coaches and great people that are no longer in the coaching profession because of the anger that they experienced after being let go. And that was incredibly prophetic, you know, because when you've gone through the situation and you know, I tell coaches, like, I spent the whole summer, you know, it takes us 5 hours to mow the lawn. And I just go back through the story over and over, trying to search for Where were the signs? What were the things we should have done differently? Why didn't we see this coming? You know, and anger comes out of that, right? Because you feel in a lot of ways like a victim. But knowing that ahead of time was really helpful for me to just sort of try to couch that a little bit and balance it with, why did I get into coaching in the first place? And again, having that sort of board of directors, those friends around me that could speak that into me was a really important balance there as well. And what did it feel like? I mean, the first Friday night when I wasn't on the sideline in January in 20 years, you know, I'm sitting at home. My five-year-old is balled up in a tent in our living room. She's underneath her sleeping bag and she's just crying because she can't understand why she's not hanging out with her best friends on the basketball team. That's really, really hard. That was maybe the hardest moment overall. Obviously, trying to figure out what to do with my time when everybody else is going to practice and playing in games and I'm not watching film anymore, that was a different challenge, you know? But I've always told our kids, you know, our players, that one of the keys to life is making friends before you need them, you know? And that was one of the other, I suppose, blessings or perspectives that was really valuable for me, is how many people came out of the woodwork and support without really knowing the full story, because we didn't really tell the full story other than to some individuals, but just that were concerned, that wanted to support us, that wanted to know we were thinking of them, was great. And, you know, for us, we still lived in Springville. My daughters go to Springville. And so we started going to their games, and that community just embraced us, sort of being back in the stands, and everybody was friendly. And that was really helpful for us. One of my friends in coaching, where I'm actually an assistant for now, invited me back to help them with some scouting. And so I got an opportunity to work with their team a little bit at the end of the year, got to do some radio at the state tournament, which I hadn't done a lot of before. So, I mean, there was a number of people that were really helpful kind of to get through the rest of that basketball season. And then over the summer, you know, I had an opportunity to have lunch with a couple players from the team that still talk to me after we left. You know, they reached out and texted and said how disappointed they were that I wasn't there. And so I got to stay in contact with them, and I took them through the real story all the way through, you know, warts and all. And that was really, really therapeutic, I think, for me, so that they actually knew what happened, and for them, because they just had so many questions, because it just didn't make sense why I would give so much and then just in the middle of a Thursday afternoon just decide that I was going to be done. And so I think they really appreciated the opportunity to know kind of what happened behind the scenes as well.
You know, Nate, I really admired, you know, kind of the way that you handled yourself throughout that entire experience after being fired. And in all honesty, I was probably the one that had to push this podcast to actually happen, this episode. And I've been the one that's been pushing it for about 9 months now, because I think there's a lot of value to learn from your story. This isn't, you know, you coming out to air your grievances and get justice. For me, this is about you telling the story that few people tell. Like, people aren't really coming on to talk about things, this experience around transformational coaching in a very transactional world, in a way that I think needs to be done. Like, I think usually when someone gets fired in coaching, you know, they're either going to say nothing because they want to save themselves for the next job, or they're going to be angry and they're going to write an article to the paper about how parents are ruining sports today. You know, like, that's the response. But, you know, this is about one of the truths around this idea of transformational coaching. Like, so often, like, we wrap a nice bow on it, like, oh, it's so nice. Like, it's great to want to make a difference in the lives of kids, and it's aspirational. And we talk about all the good things, but I think we try to, at least on this podcast, and I think it's what we're trying to do right now, is like, talk about the hard things that come with it. The cost, not just the time, you know, that you spend planning and, you know, team meetings, and you spend reading and listening to podcasts and all that stuff. But it's like the cost that comes to your family, the emotional cost, the physiological cost that it comes to coaches, not just you, but, like, you know, there's so many coaches that have gone through situations like that. I mean, we've had another coach from Wisconsin, the podcast before. And I remember, like, he went through a similar situation where he was temporarily fired, and they were, you know, people from the county were bringing his children in and interrogating, you know, his son, and they were interrogating the players, and they're recording it. And like, I mean, there's just the stories out there are just incredible of what it, you know, what this profession can take from a coach, you know, what it can cost a coach. And so I think from my perspective, I was angry. Like, I was really angry through this. And I remember trying in slight ways to encourage you to make a bigger stand, to make a bigger stink about it, because here's a guy who's trying to do things the right way, who in so many ways embodies, for me, you're a role model to me. You're someone I look up to. And so you embody this idea of, in many ways, of transformational coaching. And to see that being rejected was honestly a rejection for me, like a personal rejection of what we're trying to be about, like what I've really tried to commit the last 5 years of my life to when it comes to this work with Thrive on Challenge. So for me, that was really hard to see that. But I think this story is so important because we need to talk about kind of the darker side or the harder side to transformational coaching. Not all the time, but occasionally. So coaches, remember, when they get into it, first off, it's not going to be easy. Or when they're in it, they don't feel like they're alone in this struggle, and they don't feel like it's them failing. In all honesty, if you're facing great resistance as a coach, it's probably because you're doing things the right way. Because some people just aren't ready always to hear the message or the approach that you're trying to bring to your program.
Well, JP, I think those are all fair points. And in our next episode, we're going to get into some of the lessons learned and some of the reflections and conversations that we've had in the last year to try to not only process an experience like that, but to become better on the other side of it. And as we wrap up this episode, I guess I hope that listeners don't hear the story and think this is all about me, because it isn't. Because you wouldn't believe how many coaches that I know and coaches that I've never heard of before that somehow heard that, you know, I had stepped down or been asked to step down or whatever version of a story that made its way around that said, I went through the same thing. I know what that felt like. Or I had a season like that and somehow survived. So many coaches, as you said, go through it. And maybe that's the perspective we're just trying to share here, JP, is that when you commit yourself to wanting to coach for kids, to grow people, to be transformational, the highs can be really high and the lows can be really low. And I think the one thing that I've landed on at the end of all this, even going through all of that mess from last season, is it's still worth it to try.
Thanks to Nate for his vulnerability and willingness to share. And thank you for listening into the podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with Nate or myself, our emails are in the details of every episode. Don't hesitate to reach out. We love hearing from you. We love hearing your stories and fielding your questions.